We are now very pleased to bring you our keynote speakers to the stage. Rhys Hughes is the head of programs for BBC Radio 1 and Radio 1 Extra. And presenting with Rhys today is Ben Chapman, who's head of popular music at the BBC. So please welcome, if you would, Rhys Hughes and Ben Chapman. Rhys.
Thank you very much for inviting me to the Rain Summit. Like I say, I'm head of programs, Radio 1 and 1 Extra. We're a youth pop music station with a target audience of 15 to 29. When you think of that demographic, you obviously think of a sort of overweight, bald bloke in his mid-40s with a white beard. So anyway, as I said, we're targeted at 15 to 29-year-olds. We currently have an audience of around 10.5 million weekly, and I just want to show you a little bit of what we do. You can see that that's a bit out of date now, as it features Zane Lowe, who was subsequently left us for the might that is Apple. So we're going to take you back to sort of 1967 when Radio 1 launched. And even 20 years ago, radio was a much more simple medium. It was about a presenter presenting in a studio. It went to a transmitter. And then we all sat at home listening on our radios. I used to sit as a teenager in Lincolnshire listening to John Peel every night with a piece of paper above my pin board, writing down all the great tracks that Peel played. And I think it's fair to say my teenage years were absolutely soundtracked by Mr. John Peel. But then in 2007, everything seemed to change. And this is just an interesting ad, the first ad, I think, that the smartphone or iPhone did.
There's never been an iPod that can do this. Or this. Or this. Or for that matter, this.
I mean, I think it's fair to say that the arrival of the iPhone and the smartphone in 2007 sort of changed the game for radio forever. And if we sort of fast forward now to 2015, some of you will know that this year, obviously, Beats launched in June. We lost Zane Lowe. I also lost five members of staff that Apple poached to launch Beats. And very much how 10, 15 years ago, our sort of main competition was Capital Radio, was KISS FM in the UK. It's obviously a plethora of things now. Spotify, of course, we now know that Spotify are moving into very much content curation. And then it's about things that kind of take up our eyes and ears on the internet and the explosion of, you know, gaming and apps and all that thing, which is taking up the ears and eyes of our audience. This is just sort of my sad obsession on the internet. And if you haven't played this game, it is the most fantastic game on the iPad. And my wife will testify that I've spent far too much on the iPad with this game. Time taken up with all the kind of plethora of on-demand services you can get, like the iPlayer. Obviously, Netflix now is huge, particularly with a sort of teen audience as well. Absolutely, very much part of the competition for us. And then a couple of scary stats. 2014, 18% of all 15-year-olds in the UK had a smartphone. Streaming music is the 14th most used smartphone activity. Unfortunately, radio is now 33rd, and we come behind banking. So after the crash of 2008, how terrifying is that, that bankers are more popular? One in three children in the UK have their own tablet. One in seven now own their own radio. And this is some more scary stats, and we talk a lot about at Radio 1 and at the BBC and One Extra about lost hours. Compared to 10 years ago, radio has lost 29% of 15 to 24-year-old listening. And if you compare it to 10 to 14-year-olds, it's 50%. So you can definitely see the challenges that that youth radio is facing. So what did we do about this at Radio 1 and One Extra? Well, we came up with the strategy, a very simple strategy of listen, which is what happens and what comes out of the radio. Still the train that pulls the carriages, still massively important because that's the generator of content. But we also have in there watch, and we've been quite aggressive in the way we moved into visualization and worked with YouTube, and I'll talk a little bit about that further down the line. And also share, and that's again around social media. We now have a dedicated social media producer on both Radio 1 and One Extra. In my view, we should probably have more. So we use the power of kind of social media, particularly Twitter and Facebook during the day. And I think when we started out on Twitter, we made some mistakes. I think we carpet bombed Twitter far too much. We were just doing too many kind of tweets, and I think the audience came back and said it felt like corporate spam. So we've really kind of pulled back, and we only tweet five or six times a day now from the talking about the kind of daytime stuff. And what we've done, particularly in our specialist program in the evening, is we've harnessed the power of bands that are in, the acts that are in. So if Bring Me the Horizon are on the rock show on a Sunday night, we get Bring Me the Horizon to tweet about that rather than us doing it. Like I said, we've been pretty aggressive with the way we've worked with YouTube. We now currently are the biggest radio station globally on YouTube with about 2.72 million subscribers. And there was quite a bit of disquiet, I think, in the BBC when we first started talking about the fact that we wanted to put Radio 1 and One Extra's content on YouTube. There are people in the BBC that said we shouldn't be putting BBC content onto a third-party site. And our argument very much to them was, we need to fish where the fish are. That's where our audience is. There is no question that young people spend an inordinate amount of time on YouTube. I can't get my 14-year-old son off it. So what we talked about in that, particularly that runs with the strategy of listen, watch, share, is right content, right platform, right time. And we kind of ram that home and drill that into the staff. I've forgotten what this slide is. Oh, yes, it's Facebook. Talking about kind of social media, again, I think some of the mistakes we made initially with Facebook was we put a big post up and then we just leave it and let the audience interact. What we do now with our social media producers on both networks is they will post something, but they will also interact with the comments. So it feels like a two-way conversation. Excuse me. Too many cigarettes before I started. Again, Twitter, like I said, we felt we carpet-bombed Twitter far too much. I think on Twitter and Facebook now we have about 3 million on Facebook and Twitter. 3 million on Facebook, 3 million on Twitter when you combine both stations. When you actually add up the presenter numbers in terms of Twitter, it's close to about 20 million followers with the presenters on Twitter. But obviously it's not just about Facebook and Twitter, although we have heard a lot of young staff come in to me and go, oh, Facebook's all over, it's all over. Mike, not only is your mum on Facebook, your gran's now on Facebook. But that, I think, is rubbish. It's still a huge behemoth, Facebook, and it's still very much part of our audience's social media conversation. But obviously, we're kind of looking at other social media. Obviously, this is Snapchat, but we've been looking at Tumblr. It's always the sort of $6 million question, isn't it? Trying to second guess what the next social media explosion is going to be. Was it Vine? Is it going to be Periscope? I don't know the answer to that. That's for you guys to work out. But I think what we have done is made a real effort to kind of make building distinctive content and building a global brand. And what we've done, particularly with the sub-brand of the Live Lounge, is that we've really kind of, I think, quite nailed that as a live music performance space. We've just had Live Lounge Month on Radio 1, which we run for the whole of September. And we were supposed to have 30 live lounges in 30 days, but the Foles turned up and then couldn't perform because he lost his voice. So we actually had 29. But we did about 35 million views on YouTube with that going forward. And the other thing that we've tried to do is to try and do slightly different content. Take that interview format and kind of throw it on its head a little bit. And this is just an example of what we got Hugh Jackman to do.
Who am I? Am I a superhero with some cause? Or just an actor searching for applause? Wolverine has all the fans, and what about me, Hugh Jackman? Who am I? I play the Wolfman, yes, it's quite the task. In X-Men Days of Future Past, there's a plug. I'm at the gym doing weights each day. You have got to look up, they say. Must I lie? I cannot eat this ice cream anymore. I need a body people can adore. I gave up junk food that I know. I made that bargain long ago. And all my snacks and crisps, they're gone. And now this Wolverine can go on. Who am I?
For those of you who don't know, that's the British obsession with smut, and a feature we have, which has run for about 7 years on Radio 1 called Innuendo Bingo, and it's basically listeners sending in clips from other radio shows that have sort of super duper entendres in there. And we didn't pay Daniel to say that, but it just worked out perfectly in terms of a sort of PR exercise. This is currently, again, showing that the PowerPoint is out of date, because I was going to say we now have half a billion views on YouTube. We don't, actually. That was the gag, but it didn't work to sort of change it to 750 million. But that's what we're doing. We're going about 750 million views on YouTube. We have about 1 million views a day, and off the back of that, we launched the Radio 1 channel in the BBC iPlayer last year, and that's doing about 1.2 million views over a course of a month. Now, can anybody tell me what country this is? No? Okay. YouTube, the work that we've done with YouTube has actually been fantastic in the fact that the great kind of metadata and analytics they give us. This is North Korea. And interestingly, in North Korea, we seem to have one fan. he's watched the Taylor Swift and Greg James sing Blank James video, sing Blank Space 3 times. He's watched the 1975 in the Live Lounge twice, and he's also watched Ed Sheeran Stay With Me. We can only assume it's this man. I'll probably get shot now in the next week, won't I? Taken out by the North Korean Secret Service. But that actually, the kind of, basically, that's a sort of funny way of saying that the partnership with YouTube and the kind of the sort of the data that YouTube get has been, you know, incredibly invaluable for us. So also at the heart of our kind of strategy of listen, watch, share is, I don't think the Reithian ideal of inform, educate and entertain as a strapline for the BBC has actually been beaten since it was since they came up with it in their sort of late 20s, early 30s. Absolutely important and sort of critical to Radio 1. Because we inform our young audiences about new music, that's you know, hugely important for us. And it's not just about the mainstream shows, it's also about the sort of the real sort of niche specialist shows that we have. You know, I would argue we probably have the world's biggest drum and bass show. I'm sure there's a lot of drum and bass fans in this audience today. A bit of Radio 1 propaganda, and I know some of my global colleagues are in the building. But in the month, in any sort of given month, Radio 1 plays around almost 4,000 unique tracks. Capital Radio plays around 400. So it does show that there is a sort of massive distinction between what commercial and the BBC are doing. We educate with quality speech and outreach work. We've just had One Extra Live up in Leeds, and we did 30 days of events in the run-up to that. And we worked with local community groups, with schools and colleges. We had workshops on working in the music industry, working in radio, how to be a grime MC, dance workshops and all that kind of thing. And I think it's really important that we don't just land in Leeds as sort of Planet Showbiz, put this gig on and then leave. I think it's important that we kind of, you know, talk to the local community and make them feel involved in what we're doing. And we also do it around One Big Weekend, and we do an academy in the run-up to One Big Weekend. We were in Norwich in May, and we worked with local schools, colleges and groups in Norwich. Just in terms of news, I think news is hugely important to Radio 1 and to their audience, because more 15 to 29-year-olds get their news from Newsbeat, which is the Radio 101 Extra News service, than they do the 10 o'clock news. So again, you know, that's about educating the audience. And I think we entertain, or hopefully we entertain, with a wide range of presenters that represent you know, the full sort of spectrum and diversity of the UK. And I think, you know, we do talk about the licence fee, and we're very fortunate to have the licence fee, but I think if you talk to any of the major record labels in the UK, and we are definite seed capital for the industry, what we've done with BBC Introducing and the support that we have given to new artists, I think has really helped boost the creative industries in the UK. And in terms of innovation and creating content, developing the DJs and the producers of the future, we work very, very hard on this. We don't always get it right, but, you know, we really try and sort of be ahead of the curve and see where things are going. And distinctive content, we currently reach just under 40% of all 15 to 24-year-olds in the UK. Still work to do, but relatively impressive statistics, I think. And that's a photograph from Ibiza, which is one of my favourite events that Radio 1 do. In terms of distinctivity... I'll shut up. What I was going to say before I was a little bit trigger happy with that was that's just an example of the kind of distinctive content that we've done on One Extra as well. At this point, I think I'm going to now hand over to my colleague, Ben Chapman. Ben is head of popular music for BBC Multiplatform.
Hi, hello everyone. Reese, you see that? That's a clock there.
Yeah,
the clock's down 8 minutes on it. So this is going to be fun, right? I'll whistle you through this. 8 minutes for you to see a glimpse into the future of the BBC in music. So I'm Ben Chapman, head of popular music for Multiplatform. That means I look across all of our popular music radio stations digitally, the genre of music, and some of our most major events like Glastonbury. So let me see if I can get this started. Whoa, look at that. Hang on, back to the beginning. There we are. Ben Chapman. So, our boss, Tony Hall, recently announced, well, maybe it was about a year or so ago, I guess, that he wanted BBC Music to stand alongside BBC News and BBC Sport. And I guess the point he was making was rather obvious, was that we have an incredible amount of music at the BBC, be it on our radio stations, like some of the stuff you've just seen there for Reese, or the kind of world's largest classical music festival, like the Proms. We've got Later, we've got The Voice for now, and we've got a whole range of content that is, I hope you'd agree, is amazing. But we don't ever put it together, we don't make anything of it. And kind of at the heart of all that is our talent and our curatorial voice. And we've served that up for the last 50 years or so, And we intend to continue to serve it up for people like Apple and others for the next 50 years. But really, the point of this slide is that it's at the absolute heart of the BBC and what we do for our audiences in explaining music to people, to having a connection with people and delivering our public value. So just so you know a bit about scale, so 26.1 million people, adults listen to BBC radio each week, about 50 million watch music content on BBC TV. And I guess my job in the organisation is to try and bring the individual closer to the centre, so to learn about them, to, as I guess you're all understanding, we have to have a bit more information about our consumer to take things forward. Also to bring the BBC genre together in one place, but to look outside of the organisation and to work out how we can connect with other partners and other players in this space. So... we have looked at some research. It's quite old research, actually. But this is a cone. At the wide end of the cone, imagine the kind of mainstream audience. If you like, and at the pointy end of the cone, you've got that niche, narrow audience. They love punk, hate electronica, that kind of thing. And we did some research, and we found that at the wide, fat end of the cone, one of the most basic things we weren't doing was answering the question of, well, what is the music you're playing? And this wasn't just on radio, this was on television as well, and we were not answering that need in any way, shape or form well enough. We also found a bit further down the cone with the guys who are sort of, you know, tribal leaders in music, you know, they're open-minded. They just wanted us to recommend a whole lot more music for them. So we came up with BBC Music Playlister. It has three central strategic planks to it, and I'm going to whip through those now. So the first one is remember. We launched Playlister. You sign into Playlister, really important. We can now start to connect with our audience directly. A bit unusual for a broadcaster like us. We're kind of one to many, so we now have a relationship with you, and we start to understand the music that you start adding to your list. So we put a little orange button, as you'll see there. We've got similar symbols across all of our products now in radio that allows you to add tracks as we play them to your list. And we're even doing that in iPlayer. So when Taylor played Big Weekend, in iPlayer, you can see the music that we play that she sang at that time. And we also do that live. So this is Glastonbury 2014, I think. And we are probably one of the few places that managed to push out live music data during some of the biggest festivals in the world. But it doesn't just stop there. Music is everywhere at the BBC. It's part of our kind of creative opportunity. And so we wanted to recognise it. And now you can find against programmes like EastEnders, those little buttons appearing everywhere. And they all resolve in a place that is your list. And you can see a list on the left-hand side there, a whole bunch of stuff. And you'll see, importantly, across the top, some partner services that allow us to have a relationship with those that do a different job in the industry to us. And we can export, you can export your list to those third-party sites. Of course, on the right-hand side there, you're beginning to see how we start to make sense of that list. So you've added music from across the BBC, and we're starting to learn a bit about you, and we can recommend music for you. So what have we done? Radio 1 had a day of one-hit wonders, and we had 60,000 people adding tracks to their list. If you look at Annie Mac's show on a Friday, we did a bit of work on what the relationship is that around interaction, and you can see there that the majority of interactions are around adding tracks, whereas you would engage in a smaller way around the other types of social media. But what's interesting for us is there are stories in that bit of data. There's things that can tell us, that can inform our presenters, our commissioning, and other ways of connecting with our audience once we start to understand what our audience are really liking. So far, we've had 2 million track ads in quarter one, 2015, and we've had a 40% increase in sign-ups to the BBC, which is important, and the BBC's got a bit of a journey to go on. You'll have heard Tony Hall talking about My BBC, but it refers to us starting to allow our audience to have a much more personal experience with the organisation, and the Playlister service has been at the front of that. So that was remember, and now we're getting onto that recommendation element, and we're finding lots of new ways to connect with our audience in music. This is an example of Peter Kay's Car Share. I don't know if you saw that. This was a TV show on BBC One, a comedy, and the central part of the narrative was based around what was coming out of the car radio, the music that was coming out of the car radio. So it seemed obvious to us to aggregate all the music and to create lists of music for people to come to. It was one of our most popular playlists for recommendation. But we can extend that further. We can extend that into Wimbledon sporting events. We do them with the football, the rugby, and we can extend that naturally in, you know, when we do something as important as 20 years in Ibiza with Radio 1, you know, we can create playlists for people to recognise that. Just in terms of the way we're using data, these are just some little examples of how powerful it can be. So this is an example of the most added track from Playlister in a week, and of course that automatically pulls in the Twitter handle of that band or artist, and we publish that. This is great for that band, and it publicises amazingly. They then retweet that, and that helps our cause, and it helps them become stronger as artists. We do the same thing every time one of our presenters adds a piece of music to a playlist, that we automatically pull in the Twitter handle of the artist, and they know that the BBC has recommended them, and they tweet that around the world, and it's all good for everyone, really, and it drives new music listening. So this is slightly off topic, but I just wanted to share it because it points to our social media activity and some of the changes that we've been making. And so this is Glastonbury. We found that it's quite hard to get people to come to some of our festival content. They don't know it's there necessarily. So we used Facebook and Twitter to drive referrals this year in a new way. And what we did was we networked all of our different social media accounts across the BBC, made our content relevant to those different networks, and drove people back to our amazing set of content. You know, all of the sets from Glastonbury are available for 30 days after broadcast. And you just see in 2014 there, you can see we reached about 100,000 referrals from Facebook, and this year, 500,000 just by publishing effectively and delivering really super live GIFs and clips from our stages. So, on to the final part and replay. Recently, Tony Hall announced his response to the government green paper in a document called British Bold Creative. If you're interested, it's on the BBC website. And I will refer you all to page 84, which has in it our proposals for how we're going to continue to be a discovery service for everyone in the coming years. And we're right at the very beginning of this journey. But I suppose the most important section is here, that we aim with the music industry and the wider radio industry to build on BBC Music's Playlister service. It would make the 50,000 tracks that the BBC broadcasts every month available to listen online for a limited period. So this is all of the music that we broadcast in a limited period. It's not everything. It's not everything that, you know, that is out there. It's not a Spotify 30 million. It is a limited set of rolling music that we think is relevant to the current day or time. And we'd allow our audiences to listen to some of those lists for a limited period. And also continue the ability for people to create lists as they listen and watch the BBC. So that's our journey, and that's where we're going, and that's where I'll leave it, just a little bit over time. So thank you.